Welcome back to the program. One only has to look at the range of reactions to the Egyptian crisis to understand the scope of foreign policy ideology. From the cautious, measured reaction of the White House to the lunatic rantings of Glenn Beck, each reflects a school of thought, a kind of theoretical paradigm through which to see the world. Imagine, then, if the zombies showed up tomorrow, what would our position be on the undead? What might be the social, political, and foreign policy considerations? And most of all, how would the zombies affect Israel? These fundamental ideas are the backdrop of Daniel Dresner's new book, Theories of International Politics and Zombies. Daniel Dresner is a professor of international politics at the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy at Tufts University. His previous book is All Politics is Global. It is my pleasure to have Daniel Dresner here to talk about Theories of International Politics and Zombies. Dan Dresner, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
One of the things that this points out, certainly, is that we generally know more about zombies than we do about what's going on in the realm of international relations.
Unfortunately, I think that's extremely true of undergraduates, which is why I wrote the book. I figured this was a way to sort of hook them into different kinds of ways of thinking about international relations using something that they've grown up with.
How did you make the leap from zombies to tying it into the realm of international relations?
Well, basically, I've always been interested in international relations. I have a PhD in the subject, but I've also always been interested in pop culture. And about 2 years ago, there was an article that was published that treated zombies like a disease, like a pathogen, and speculated what would happen in that kind of world, and it decided that, like much like every zombie movie, that the world would end as we knew it. And so, you know, this was an amusing article, and I read it, and I thought, well, wait a minute, there's no politics in this. There's no explanation of where, how different governments would respond. So I decided to sort of write up a little blog post on this. I blog for Foreign Policy Magazine. And it generated a surprising amount of feedback. And what was really interesting was is that I talked to a fair number of my colleagues, international relations professors, and they said that this was a way in which they could actually get their students to understand, you know, more abstract paradigms like constructivism or bureaucratic politics or what have you. And so that was where I thought, okay, maybe I should expand this into something a little more ambitious.
There is another political context in that if we look at zombie literature and zombie movies in general, particularly movies, that they seem to do better in more paranoid times, in times of uncertainty, the Cold War being perhaps the penultimate example.
No, I think that's true. Zombie movies have done extremely well during periods where, and there's actually some modest statistical evidence to back this up, for any time of sort of hard times. So it's not a coincidence, I think, for example, that over the past decade since 9/11, more than one-third to one-half of all zombie movies have been made during this time. So as a result, you know, you can argue that zombies represent what former Secretary of Defense Don Rumsfeld called the ultimate unknown unknown. And so anytime there's a real threat, it's very easy to sort of take zombies and adapt it to sort of make it as a symbol of that threat.
And one of the things you do is you take these different theoretical paradigms and apply it to how people might in fact react to a zombie attack, a zombie invasion.
Right. I decide how would different governments respond. And, of course, the different theories offer some interesting and different contrasting predictions. And, you know, obviously, hopefully if people laugh along the way, that's not the worst thing in the world.
Right. I mean, for example, the neocons would say, you know, as you say, the zombies would hate our freedoms, that we'd have to have a military response.
Well, right. You know, the neocons, to their credit, would recognize zombies immediately as an existential threat. They would hate us for our freedoms, namely our freedom not to eat other people's brains. So they would recommend an aggressive militarized response, probably trying to insert, you know, troops and use shock and awe to force local populations in zombie-infested territories to rise up and overthrow their undead oppressors. The problem, of course, is that the neoconservatives would be unlikely to stop with the zombies. Neocons, if they trip on a sidewalk, tend to notice an existential threat from cracks in the sidewalk. They would automatically assume that there would be an axis of evil dead, that the zombies must be in league with other enemies of the United States, you know, China, Russia, Iran, Al-Qaeda, the United Nations, these kinds of elements. And as a result, this would make coalition warfare extremely difficult and would probably undermine the very efforts that the neocons would advocate.
Certainly they'd be Al-Qaeda cells among the zombies.
Oh, you know that there would be, you know, paranoia that Al-Qaeda would actually be responsible for the zombies. This would be yet another example that would be cited of how Al-Qaeda is, you know, adapting to the 21st century.
And then, of course, neocons would also be concerned, as I said jokingly in the introduction, of how the zombies would affect Israel.
Yes, well, that's, you know, that's Are zombies good for the Jews? That's always an important question.
Always
you have
an important
to ask.
Question.
As a Jew myself, I always, you know, that was my first thought when I started writing the book.
And of course, on the other hand, liberals would look at this and say, well, it's okay because we need open borders.
Well, this is the problem. Liberals are, you know, again, the problem they would face is that their initial set of policies would likely exacerbate the spread of zombies. They do advocate open borders. They advocate an open global economy, thinking that it's a win-win world out there, and that's certainly true in some instances. However, this would also facilitate the spread of zombies across borders, and that would make things somewhat difficult. Liberals' response, of course, would be the creation of a global counter-zombie regime, maybe even a world zombie organization, that would try to deal with quelling and regulating the undead, with the belief that, you know, killing the undead is probably a pretty major public good. And so you would probably see an imperfect, you know, regime created that would try to, you know, potentially eliminate the zombie infestations on the earth. And it would probably do a reasonably good job, you know, in the advanced industrialized states, and probably do a not so great job in some of the weak and failing states out there. You know, Pakistan would get run over the moment an undead zombie would appear there in the first place.
Right. Of course, it might be difficult trying to regulate the living dead as they try and move across borders.
This is an issue. I mean, there would be squabbling on these questions of how do you regulate the undead. You know, one of the jokes I make, my area of expertise is actually global political economy, and one of the jokes I make in the book is that I guarantee you that, you know, we don't know exactly what would happen, but if zombies were to emerge, I guarantee two things would automatically happen, which is first, the European Union would ban British beef, and Japan and South Korea would ban American beef, because any opportunity they have to ban these things they would automatically take.
And, of course, one of the things that's axiomatic in zombie movies is bureaucracies always screw up and corporations don't do a whole lot better.
It's true. You know, one of the long-running themes in these books is that and movies is that governments are feckless and incompetent and can never really adapt to the undead. And, indeed, you're right that corporations are a little better. In fact, very frequently, either it's some sort of military bureaucracy, or it's a multinational corporation that's responsible for the creation of the zombies in the first place. In that sense, actually, my book wound up becoming a little more optimistic than I would have thought going in that I actually think that zombie movies are a little too quick to write off humanity.
Mm-hmm.
That, in fact, what would happen is that, you know, just as the zombies can adapt, human beings, you know, our greatest strength, our comparative advantage compared to the undead, is in fact our ability to adapt. And therefore, that I think even if bureaucracies would probably have a first attempt and that would fail, they probably would adapt over time.
Of course, there would be this attitude, probably from Dick Cheney, that even if there was a 1% chance that the zombies would attack, we would have to go after them quickly.
Well, in fact, based on Dick Cheney's 1% doctrine, I argue that we should be spending massive sums of money now on preventing zombies. Because, you know, admittedly, you know, it's probably a less than 1% chance that we will see an army of the undead anytime in the next decade. On the other hand, based on the zombie movies, based on the zombie canon, the effect of the rise of the undead is far worse than any Al-Qaeda attack. You know, if you see any zombie movie, it always follows the same pattern. You see the zombie born, and then at the 10-minute mark of the movie, we're in a post-apocalyptic wasteland. So even if there's a 0.01% chance of the undead actually existing, given that the results would be so dire, I think, you know, you definitely need to see more money invested in anti-zombie activities.
And if we don't invest more money, we could face a zombie gap.
Exactly. And, you know, that was the thing that really surprised me when I started doing the research for this book, which was, shockingly, there had been peer-reviewed scholarship on international relations and hobbits and Lord of the Rings, international relations and Harry Potter and wizards, certainly a lot of international relations and vampires. There was, in fact, a zombie gap. And I'm very proud that I was able to sort of step into the breach and deal with this really important subject.
Taking this back a step, Dan, what does this tell us, though, about how we look at foreign policy thinking today? Does it poke holes in it? Does it sort of negate some of the seriousness of these different paradigms with respect to international politics?
Well, I think part of my purpose here was, in fact, to suggest that perhaps some of the assumptions made in some of these paradigms might not be the most realistic assumptions made in the world. And then maybe we should start thinking about those a little more seriously. I think one of the interesting things about, you know, treating zombies as the threat is that zombies are a very protean and non-state actor. And the fact is most international relations theories, most of the paradigms that you talked about with which we view the world are inherently based on states, on governments, and the belief that governments are the primary actors in world politics. And to some extent, that's still true. And I think in a lot of areas, that's absolutely true. But on the other hand, there are threats out there to the the global commons and to the United States that aren't really from other states. I mean, Al-Qaeda is a non-state actor. And there are even actors or threats out there that aren't really actors, like pandemics, like global warming and climate change, that we really do need to adapt to. And I think our sort of international relations frameworks are not well suited towards dealing with that.
Mm-hmm. And talk a little bit about, you know, we'd have a red state and a blue state reaction to zombies, too.
That would be true. I try not to talk that much about domestic politics, although I talked a little bit about that. I mean, in some ways, to be fair, the red state reaction might be pretty good on this one because, you know, in studying where you'd want to be in case zombies would break out, you'd presumably want to be in a place where there's a fair number of firearms and where the Second Amendment is respected quite vigorously. and in fact, urban areas are probably the worst place to be if there was a zombie outbreak because, of course, that's fresh material to create more zombies.
Mm-hmm. How have the students responded to this idea?
The book has just come out, so I'll be using the book probably next semester. But I have to say, I've already presented this at a couple of universities, and I've really been very, very pleased with the reaction. The first time I gave this talk, I was really worried. You know, it's a very fine line you have to walk trying to present this kind of material. And when I was done, there was about a sort of minute of stunned silence from the students. They weren't quite sure how to react. And then the questions started coming. And I was very happy because the person who invited me told me later that that talk generated the most undergraduate response they'd ever received in the history of the seminar. So in that sense, it really is actually, I think, getting students to think in a creative way about world politics. And I certainly think we could do with a lot more creative thinking about world politics nowadays.
Of course, the danger is it would give rise to subgroups like the People for the Ethical Treatment of Zombies.
That's correct. And they talk about this in the liberal model, that one of the problems, one of the things that might hamper any kind of counter-zombie campaign would be the rise of global civil society, you know, interested in zombie rights. So, as you say, there would be a various, you know, possible nonprofit, you know, NGOs that would emerge: Zombies Without Borders, Zombaid, People for the Ethical Treatment of Zombies, Zombie Rights Watch, and you know, you have no doubt that you would see lots of protest movements trying to hamper any kind of effort to combat the undead.
I want to come back to sort of the overall conclusion that, in fact, the world will come out of this okay, that strong states will, in fact, do pretty well. What does that really tell us about the state of foreign affairs today?
Well, I would say a couple things. I mean, first, it suggests that perhaps we overreact sometimes to the, you know, slightest hint of a threat, that, you know, very often it might be the case that what seems like something that's really new actually isn't. And so as a result, you know, this is sort of a rule from international politics that goes back to Thucydides. And if you adapt Thucydides to a zombie apocalypse, you conclude that the strong do what they can and the weak must suffer being devoured by reanimated ravenous corpses. So that's certainly, on the one hand, one of the things that's going on. Beyond that, I mean, I think that in some ways what this theory, you know, what this this book suggests is that, in fact, although, you know, we're very state-centric when we think about world politics, there still would be a lot of carnage, even in a world where strong states survive, because the fact is most of the population in this world lives in weak states. And so as a result, if you believe in any concept like human security, even a zombie apocalypse would be pretty serious.
You know, beyond students, one of the other interesting things about this is going to be to see how various members of these different groups, these different paradigms, react to this and see who might have a sense of humor about it, who doesn't, and what it tells us about them in and of itself.
Yes, I'm very much looking forward to the academic reaction to this book.
What do you think the reaction will be among foreign policy establishment types?
Oh, I think some people will probably ignore it, thinking that it is frivolous and not worth taking seriously. I think others genuinely get the idea that I'm what I'm trying to do here, and have actually responded in some ways very creatively. Reading blog responses to this so far, I've been very impressed with some of the reactions to this, actually asking why I haven't taken other theories that I couldn't fit into the book into account.
And, of course, it won't be long before we see the WikiLeaks documents about zombies.
I was very disappointed that there was no mention of zombies in the WikiLeaks, and I can only conclude that, after all, WikiLeaks was only classified in below cables. I have to assume that the undead stuff is clearly top secret or higher.
And, of course, there's a social aspect to the whole undead issue and religious connotations which are going to play into this.
Yes, and actually, I've presented this material at a zombie conference. It was called ZombieCon 2010. And I have to say, I was really very impressed with the questions I got from there. Among others, someone asking me, well, what would be the religious response? And to tell you the truth, that is another example of an issue that I would not have thought of as someone trained in international relations. But, of course, that's absolutely correct. There would undoubtedly be a religious revival in various parts of the world. And, of course, those religions wouldn't necessarily agree with each other.
Right, because you can't take the undead and try and reanimate them without religious connotations.
Absolutely. You know, and there would be no doubt millenarist movements, you know, who believe that now the end times are near. And, you know, that would lead them to do perhaps some silly and counterproductive things.
Daniel Dresner, the book is Theories of International Politics and Zombies. Dan, I thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Oh, please, thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Thank you. We'll take a break. I'll be right back.